All right, welcome back to Computer Science E75. This is week two of sections. My name is Siddharth, and the email for if it's during the class or after, any time you want to get in touch with the course staff, the email that you want to write to is help@cs75.net. The email is up here. We're constantly checking it, so you should have a response within 24 hours. So I thought I'd do a little recap of last week, go into the specs of Project Zero specifically, and finish up some of the examples that I started looking through last week. So to begin with, the specs of Project Zero, which are up, I don't know if you guys have had a chance to see it. You should have pointed your domain, your subdomain to cloud.cs75.net. You should have received a confirmation email from the bot. If you haven't, there's still time, but keep in mind that there's a period of 72 hours before you will have your host ready to go. So make sure you do it before the deadline. So we looked at some of the specs last week. So you need a home page, you need pages that are linked, you need CSS, which we also looked at briefly, and it needs to be validated. We looked at two pages for validating both an add-on and the website. The fifth one is that your website should appear the same across multiple browsers. So we talked about this again. And it's very hard because each browser decides to render your HTML differently, slightly differently. So in order to maintain cross-browser functionality, you need to check to make sure that your code works across browsers. A great tool for this is called Browser Shots. It's browsershots.org. And basically, you can enter a URL. So let's say google.com and pick whichever browsers you want, and it will render screenshots of the page in those browsers. It's very nifty, except that it takes a while. So let's say I just pick Firefox 4, screen size, don't care. I don't care about any of these, and I just want to submit. It takes a while, so there are so you have specifications, so it takes a while for it to create the images and upload it. So make sure you do it again a little bit ahead of the deadline to make sure things look the same. All right, back to my code lives. This is something that was asked on the Google groups, but my code lives on sections.ohiworld.com. There's also a link to this on the sections page of CS75. As and when section is over, the examples will go up like an hour before section, then should be there, so you can take a look at the source code if you have any questions. All right, so let's sections week two. So the first one we're going to look at is the hello world of PHP. Last week we looked at hello world in HTML, which is pretty straightforward. It doesn't do much, but it basically prints "Oh hi world" and with some very, let me make that bigger. With some very basic HTML that I'm sure you're familiar with. Today we will look at the same version in PHP. It does basically the same thing. Let's take a look at the source, and you see only the HTML part of it. Let's take a look at the actual, let's take a look at the actual source of the file, which is now in. So all the PHP source files are labeled PHPS, so you should be able to find them fairly easily when you're looking for them.
Can I ask you a question? What's the difference between PHP and PHPS?
So the question is, what is the difference between PHP and PHPS? PHPS is basically, it renders it like a text file. So when a file ends with PHP, the browser knows that it has to process the PHP code that's embedded within. So PHPS, just to help remember, is PHP source. I basically label it as PHP source. It's as good as copying it into a text file and uploading it. So it's essentially, it displays the source without actually processing the code, which is exactly what it's done here. If you take a look at this part of it, the code, the rest of it is all HTML. There's just this one part within a less than sign, angle brackets, and question marks. And it says echo hello world. So the idea, this example is really trivial, and I'm sure you've seen it in lecture, but what I wanted to get across is that PHP is basically a way to create, you can think of it as a way to create HTMLs. So HTML does not give you any of the familiar sort of programming language tools that you get. Variables, if conditions, for loops, or any of those. So PHP basically helps you, gives you all these tools and helps you generate HTML. So even though this is the actual source of the file, when we look at the actual file, the source of it, it just replaces that. It replaces the code with that, whatever we echoed out. The question?
So any file that has PHP code in it has to have a PHP or PHPS file extension.
Any code. The question is: does any file with PHP code in it have to have a PHP or PHPS? It does have to have a PHP. But PHPS is just something that I've come up with for the past year and a half, that I just copy the file as PHPS, because like I said, PHP source. So it doesn't need a PHPS extension. So for instance, so this file right here, if you look at this, the first one is the one that we just looked at. So let me rename this. And this is a command that I didn't go into during the first section. But to rename files in Unix, it is mv, so move file name, current file name, to new file name. So let me actually make this PHP file an HTML file. So I'm going to replace the extension. So I'm changing one hello world.php to one hello world.html. Let's close this. Let's go back. Let's refresh. So here's a new page. We look at the source. And there we go. So it's the browser did not know to process that as PHP. So in order to tell the browser that there is PHP code embedded here and that you need to look for it, we rename files of extension PHP. Sweet. So let me go back and undo that. Hello world.html to .php. Let's refresh again. PHP. Sweet. So the idea of PHP is that it gives you two things. One, the familiar language constructs, i.e. variables, if conditions, looping, and all of those. The primary idea is to make it dynamic. So HTML pages are static. So any page that you look at, regardless of what input you give it, is always going to be rendered the same way, because there's no dynamism in HTML. So PHP really becomes interesting only when there is sort of interaction with the user. And this is an example from last week, but I didn't get enough time to do it nearly enough justice, so thought I would go into it again. Most of this should be familiar to you. The form part is, let me actually make this a little bigger. So this part is the most interesting part of this file. So there's a form tag which has an action that links to some PHP file. We'll come back and take a look at what it is. There's a method called get. And the next two lines are just static HTML. So there's always a text field. There's a button of type submit. So when you click it, the idea of the type submit is that it will submit the form. It will submit the form to the action that you've described. So when I hit foo, so take a look at the URL here. I'm going to zoom into it so you can. So we were on dynamic form get.html, and when I submit it, there are two interesting things. One is the file name is the same file name that I embedded in my form. The second thing is the name attribute there. This, as you've seen in lecture by now, is a property of using the method type get. So get makes a request. So get and post are both ways of making requests. So you're making a request and giving it additional information. So there's the, let me grab a different colored pen. So there's the URL, which has http://.something.php. So let's add this PHP here. And then there is something here. And a bunch of ands that go into more detail. Another great example of this is most websites that you use on an everyday basis. So let's search for CS75. So since it was instant, I had to hit enter to actually show you this. But if you take a look at the URL there, it's actually, there are a bunch of key value pairs. So there's something equals something and something else equals something else. So if you look at the most interesting part here, the Q, which presumably stands for query, is CS75, which I just searched for. So the fact that we saw it in the URL is a property of using the get method. And the form somehow has access to these attributes that we pass in the URL, and then just displays it. Let's take a look at, yes, go on.
I don't understand why something shows up in the URL line. It's not, is it going somewhere out on the internet?
So the question is, why is something showing up in the URL line? So basically what happens is anything after the question mark gets passed to the page that you just visited. So let's take a look at the source, and it'll probably make things clearer, and we'll come back to this question if you're still not sure.
As long as it's a
get. Yes, as long as it is a get, you will see it on the URL. So let's take a look at manage form. So let me manage for copy manage form, which is number 424.phps. Let's hit refresh and open this. Oops. So like we did last time, so chmod 644 is read for everybody. So let's go PHPS and let's hit refresh. That should work. So once again, very, very like basic HTML. So there's an HTML tag, there's a head, there's a body. Most interesting part of this file is this part right here. So if you look at this, it says echo, it says something dollar get. We'll come back to what that means. But there's this name variable that it looks at. So if you have if you're familiar with any of most programming languages, C or Ruby or Python, an array, you access values of an array or a hash by in this form. So you give it a key and it returns the value that it stores. So if let's actually open the same file again with name equals foo. So keep in mind that let's try changing this first. Let's say names equals foo and that part is empty. Here, this get actually grabs that variable called name. So going back to your question before, when you pass it in, when you give it that in the URL, basically this get, which is a global variable, variables in PHP always start with the sign dollar, and this global variable is called get. So all the variables, all the attributes that you passed in the URL get stored in this sort of hash. Does that make sense? And once that happens, you basically are accessing it, and you're just echoing out whatever the value was in that. In this case, it happened to be foo, so let's make this foo bar. It's still name, so that didn't work. So name, foo bar, there we go. This is not doing much at all, but we've looked at the get method. Let's look at the post, which is the other form of request that you can make. It's also the same thing, so let's submit. Doesn't seem to work. We'll come back to why it doesn't. We did the last section, but it's probably helpful to go over it again. It passes it to the same form. Everything is the same from the previous file except for the method, which says post. So when I submit now, it actually does not show me anything in the URL. So let's actually take a look at what exactly is stored using this add-on, Firebug or Live HTTP Editors, which we looked at. Another add-on that's very useful. It's tamper data. It basically helps you tamper with post variables that your forms are submitting. So when you hit start, and I'm going to go back here. Oops. Where's my tamper data? So I've hit start tamper. I'm going to hit submit. And it says tamper with request. Let's just tamper to see what it's storing. And when you take a look at this, the post parameter has this name that we talked about, along with the value that it stores. So it has the name, and the name is foo, which is the exact name that we submitted in the first place. Clear so far? Sweet. So let's actually change this to something else. Let's hit OK. It let the request complete. So we'll just stop here. We'll go back and take a look at the source and for manage form again. Manageform.phps. So we're using the same form for get and post. This is actually a question that came up in the mailing list. The reason this page didn't work was we were submitting using the post form and we're looking in the get variable. So when you submit, so the general structure of any such request is sort of a form. Submits to this page, which processes the form. So you have a form that submits to another page that processes the form. In this case, these are the two forms that we looked at, and this is manageform.php. So here, when you submit it by get, you see that the URL, let's call this page.php. So when you submit something by GET, and you're submitting, say, X equals 5 or Y equals Z, which all of which are like text boxes in your form, and you submit these using GET, what happens is the URL that is called, it becomes page.php, X equals 5, and Y equals Z, etc. When you submit using POST, none of this is shown. It somehow passes the POST attributes to the page. When you make a request using GET, you also see that all the attributes that you passed in here are in fact stored in this variable. Very much the same in POST. When all these are made, it is stored in $_POST, all capitals. So everything that we pass it, so if we made the same submit using POST, it will basically contain the same hash in POST. Make sense so far? Any questions? Yeah.
So the $GET and $POST are arrays themselves?
Yes, $GET and $POST are arrays themselves. They're just normal variables, except that they're global, so it's sort of you've not created them.
Is it bad practice to test which one exists and use that, since both wouldn't be there in the first place?
Is it where?
Bad programming practice to test on one or the other?
So the question is it bad programming practice to test on one, but it depends on what you're using it for. For instance, if you're making.
You wanted to make it generic so that it would work on whether you didn't care if it was.
Oh, whether it would care, right. So the question is, do you want to have a check for sort of both and see use whichever one has values? Usually not necessary because you're the one who's constructing the form that submits to it. So you can decide which one you want to go with. If you're submitting a password, for instance, it probably doesn't make sense to go with GET. Right? So when you don't want users going on a page and their username and password in plain text, store it on the URL. So you're the one who's writing both parts of this. In general, I guess if it's something like a search, if you have a search box, I have an example later that we'll come back to. It probably is useful to use GET simply because it's so easy to access it. So all you need to do is sort of append things to the URL, and you can make the request immediately. But it depends very much on the domain of what you're doing. Any other questions? Sweet. So let's go back. So far, so good. So we've taken a look at both of these. So let's make things a little more interesting now. I'm going to give it a string of, actually, let me just demo what it does, and then we can figure out how it does it. So first I'm going to submit foo, and it doesn't do anything. I'm going to submit, it still doesn't do anything, so something is missing here. So let's go to the actual file and take a look at it. Yeah? The question was, do you have to use colon delimiters? That's very specific to my example. So I was just gonna show you something with PHP using that. So let's take a look at the source of this page first. So if you take a look at the action, it is submitting to a form called six process split text, which sort of suggests what it's doing. So presumably you're going to give it a text a line of text, and it will split it on the colons. So let's open sixprocessSplitText.php. I'm sorry the color is such a terrible color scheme, but VI does it. But if you take a look at, so let me close the source. So let me submit this to the form. So here I'm saying this variable called explodedText equals explode. I'm giving it a colon and then the get.name. So in general, PHP documentation is very, very good. So part of the reason I'm doing this example is for you to sort of figure out how to look through the PHP world. So Googling something like split text PHP, you see that there are two functions here. One is split string into array by regular expression. We can go into regular expression later if we have time, but let's just take a look at explode. So like I said, PHP in general has great documentation, and most of the information is right here. So it says array explode, delimiter, and then the string. So it's basically taking a delimiter and the string, and it returns an array. So it presumably returns an array of every part of your string. So why then is this not working? I'm submitting to it, right? So it's like foobar z, which is going through, the get request is being made. Does anybody see why there's a problem here? Let's show you the request again, and then I'll show you. I'll actually move this down so you can. I'm sorry? So the question is, do you have to use post? Not necessarily. In the previous example, but in this example, I'm getting it from the get variable. So here I have to use get. Is that?
So what does explode colon dot name?
Yeah, so that's why I just pointed out in this file. So explode basically takes a delimiter, which is any part of a string and an actual string, and splits that string based on the delimiter.
And the delimiter is like a comma or?
Yeah, it can be whatever you want. So if you have let's say x colon yz colon abc, and if you use a delimiter of a colon,
right,
it will basically give you an array with three parts in that form.
And that's the output is an array?
So the output of that is an array.
Of the function
is an array. And that you can see by the description, it says right here, array explode. So that's the return value of the function. So take a look at the, so let's actually try to echo out what the problem is. So I'm going to go PHP, echo, let's do get of name.
Is it because I
didn't set a limit? Does the limit is optional as indicated by the square brackets around it. So this part right here says it's optional. If you want, you can add it, but if you don't, you don't. So let's actually just echo that, see what happens. Let's put in a semicolon here just to make it clear. So let's go here. So let's try this. Maybe it's that. Do you see the difference there? I was submitting using capital name. My attribute was capitalized, but the actual variable that I was looking for was lowercase. This is something that I've hit upon multiple times, so just look out for it. It's really frustrating when you're passing something into a form, but you have no idea why, especially if you're posting. This is when tampered data or something to that effect comes into use, because you can just take a look at what exactly is the name of the variable you posted, even if you don't remember. So now let's go back and fix this. So let's remove this debugging line. Let's go here. Let's say look for name. Let's go back here. Go to this form. Oh, there we go. So it just printed out the first part of my string. And how did that happen? It first stores the return value, that is the array of three strings, in this variable called exploded text. And then it basically echoes out exploded text of 0, which is the first variable. So when I did foo bar z or whatever, the result was foo. Example clear?
So if we had the other code next to it, we would have noticed that it was case sensitive?
Yes, if we had had the other code, that's another way to go back to your form and change it and look at it to see what the variable you were submitting to was. So you would have noticed that it is in fact case sensitive.
You have that other form.
Yes, I do have the other form if you want to take a look. Let's, is this the one? Nope. Let's see, sorry. There we go. So, in fact, name, it says capital N. It also helps to sort of pick a convention and stick with it. In general, the variables start with lowercase letters, so it probably helps just normalize it across all your forms so you probably won't hit upon this issue. Sorry, do you?
Yes, so variables begin with a dollar sign.
So variables do begin, yes.
Does a dollar sign underscore mean array?
So question was dollar sign underscore mean an array? No. So dollar sign underscore is just a convention. So it doesn't really have to mean, you can create variables that start with dollar sign underscore. I haven't tried it, but I'm pretty sure you can. It's just a convention, and this is the way the get and like most global variables are stored. So the session variable, which you might have seen in lecture 2 last week, is actually dollar underscore session, all capital. So all of these sort of follow this convention of dollar sign underscore and then the name in capital letters.
So does that mean that usually global variables begin with dollar
signs? Yes. Usually global variables begin with dollar signs? Yes. It's not a strict condition. I don't think anybody enforced it, but that is the convention. So any other questions? Sweet. So this goes back to, so we've seen this. So let's do, So, before Firefox came up with this nifty little thing to search across multiple things, I decided that we could search across different engines by just picking which engine you wanted. So let's try something like CS75. Let's hit Google, start search. Oops, did I change the file name? Let me just check to make sure. Form search.p. Oops, I did. One second. There we go. So let's quit this. Let's move 7 search.p to search.p. HP. Let's hit refresh. Oops. Now go back again. So search.php. So we're going to say Google. Let's search for CS75. Start search. And it searches, it completes a search in Google. Search in Yahoo. Does the same thing there. And similarly with Bing. So how do any of you see how would you go about doing writing something like this, given how much you know about PHP? Any ideas?
Form.
Yeah, you have a form, right? So where would you submit the form to?
Where would you
So you have a form,
right.
And the form is submitted to some page, right? So you have the form here,
okay.
Right? And you have to submit it to
your PHP.
Right. So here the action is unlike, we'll look at the code again, but it's not like any other files we've seen. Instead of submitting to 2 separate pages, you're sort of submitting to the same page and handling it right there. And then what you can do is have the URL, append things per the get request we made. So if you look at the URLs right here, it says bing.com search q equals C75. Let's go back. Let's take a look at Google's search. Google.com search. So it basically takes your query. This is what we want to do from a high level. We want to take the query. We want to see which search engine you picked. And then once we do that, we just have to append it to the URL of the respective search engine and submit, sort of move you to that page. Does that make sense? Sweet.
But in this case,
Yep, so the question is, in this case, the PHP is in the same file? Yes, the question it is. We'll take a look at the source now and go through it. So let's go back here. Let's take a look at the source. So let me actually replace this. 7 search, search.php to search.phps. Go back here because we made a change there. Okay. So the first thing we see is this is set get queue. So let's take a look at what is set does. Let's just Google for it. So makes sense. The function is very aptly named. It just checks to see if a variable is set or not. So if you just initialize a variable without equating it to something, it will say false, if otherwise true. Okay, so
why don't you just say if variable not equal.
Yes, so that was something I was going to go into, but it's a very subtle gotcha in PHP, and this is something that I ran into a couple of weeks ago, where if a variable equals 0, PHP actually treats that as false. So if you when false and 0 somehow sort of relate to the same thing, so if you say if 0, that's sort of like saying if it's false, not necessarily, but you probably want to have an explicit condition which just checks for is set, as opposed to just if true, like you would do in many other. Or if null, that works too. But I'm not entirely sure where null is used, so that could work, but isset is probably the safest way to go. Because isset takes into account these conditions and returns a true or false based on them. So it says if this is set and the engine is set, you're gonna say get engine equals Google. So let's take a look at the URL of the form that we submitted. To search.php. So let's say CS75. Let's open tamper data. Let's clear all of this and just hit start search. Oops, I should have started tamper. Let's start tamper. Let's go back here and hit CS75. So take a look at the actual request that's being made. The actual request that's being made is being made to week2/search.php q equals CS75 and engine equals Google. So it's actually being made to the same page with these values in the URL. So these are going to be stored in the get variable that we talked about. So let's just submit this request. And then there's another request being made, which is google.com/search and the URL that we want to go to. Let's let this go through too, and then we'll Google has a bunch of things that it does, so we'll just submit all of these and then stop tamper. Let's close this and go back to the source. So it stores the engine is where it stores the name. The two variables that we gave it in the URL are Q and engine. So Q is the query, and engine is obviously which search engine you wanna store it in. So it checks to see if engine is Google or it is. If it is Google, it says header to this. This is basically how you redirect pages in PHP. So once you get to a page, you just hit header and set the location part of it. So right here, if you see header location. The dot between the get variable and the string is how you concatenate two strings in PHP. So if you have, let's get the wrong color pen. So if you have foo is one of your strings, and you've set variable x to bar, the way you would construct, let's say I want to store y to be equal to what foo dot whatever dollar x is. The way you would do that is foo dot dollar x. This basically concatenates these two strings and returns a concatenated version. It's plus in a lot of other languages. It's PHP just picks period to do that. If that is not the case, else if engine equals Yahoo, or else if engine equals Bing, go ahead and set the and redirect them to that part. Questions?
Yeah, so I noticed, I'm sorry. Go ahead. The white spaces are automatically eliminated.
So the white spaces are all automatically eliminated? Yes. Okay. For the most part. There are some weird cases again, but I just want to make it clear that there's a period in there, so.
Okay.
Two things. One, you said that the header, what was the term? You said that unless you forward it?
Redirect it. Yeah.
And then my second question is, all the search engines standardize on Q as their query variable?
The question is, do all the search engines standardize on Q? It actually surprisingly did do, because it makes sense, because they don't want a big variable, right? The URL is already very large because of how much data they send through each request. So when we searched on Google, so even though we just searched for CS75, the amount of data that was sent across the URL was a lot. So it probably helps to just make the variable name smaller so that their URL size is not too big.
The location field is the first piece of text within the header of the description of where it's being directed to. Is that how does that work?
So the question is, how does this, so let's take a look at live, actually. So the question was: the location field is the first field in the redirect function. Let's first take a look at the redirect function. Oops, what was the function called? Header. Header PHP. So this right here, it just takes a string and sends it across as the HTTP header of the page. So when it looks at the HTTP header with the location set, it's basically like a key value pair again. So it says location and gives it a string. HTTP header looks at that string and redirects it to that page.
So what's parsing it?
What is parsing it? The browser. So let's go back to OpenTapper data again. I'm going to close Google because. Let's go here again. Oops. Where's my tamper data? So let's clear and start tamper and hit refresh. I'm not sure if it... So I believe the header right here, the request header that you see on the left side, has an additional location field that it does not that is shown on the top. This is roughly the header that you're editing. So you change the location field, and it makes that request.
That doesn't happen on the server side. It does that lookup without going back. I would have thought it would have stayed on the server and the redirect would have remained there and done the calling header.
So the question is, does it happen on the server side? To be honest, I'm not sure. I can check into that for you. I've never looked into how redirecting with PHP works.
If it went back to the browser, something there would have to.
Right, but so the question is, if it went back to the browser, something there would have to do it. Yes, you are right. Something there would have to redirect it. So I'm not sure. I can take a look and let you know. Because when you echo something, so if you do echo something before this, it actually does not let you redirect. It says you will see this error called headers have been transferred. You cannot redirect now. So I can look into that and either speak to you after class or later. Okay, so let's come back to the actual form. So there's some text here which says, please type in a keyword to search. This is what we saw. There's a break, and the form action is search.php, which is the name of the file that we're in. So the idea of sort of submitting to your own search page and looking at stuff. Method is get, so that's why we saw the variables in the URL. Now it says, if this is set, and the engine is not set. So if you're submitting a form that has some query variable but does not set the engine, so in the form that we looked at, so there's the text box and three radio buttons. So you have some text and you have something that's set here, but this is not set. If nothing is stored in there, let's see. So where is that? So yep. So here. So we have this. One second. So we actually, let's just try that. That will probably make it clearer than me explaining it. World sections. Oops. Oh. Yeah. Let's close that. Let's go to sections. Week two. Search.php. So I'm gonna search for. So you see this neat little error message here, which says, "Please select the search engine to use," which is great. So we don't want to let them like submit this form without selecting an actual file. This speaks to something that you will come across through the next three projects that you work on: the idea of validating your user's input. Because for never once can you trust that a user will, for instance, give you an input or give you the input that you're thinking. So you might be expecting a string, and he gives you an integer. So sort of figuring out. In project one, where you work, where you create Pizza ML, that's the name of the project, and you will see that you will deal with fake money. So you will make transactions. You will let people add quantities of pizza to their cart. There, if you're expecting a string and don't check to see if you're expecting a number and don't check to see that it's a number, you could very well insert a string that can screw your application up. Let's go back to the code. That's another great example. So they can submit a negative quantity of, or perhaps if you don't validate, if for instance you let, so this is another common example of validating and using GET requests. So let's say you have a database, somehow you've stored like the price of everything that you want. You let them select a quantity, but when you pass it to the page that your cart that processes the information that you submitted, you pass the price as a post variable. So even though you've already looked it up in the first page, you probably don't want to pass it in a post variable because they could just edit it and make it negative and pay negative amount of money to buy whatever. So any information that you don't want them to tamper with, you probably have to look up from your own source every time. We will deal with this more when we come back to when we do sections around project one. But if this is set and this is not set, we want to say, font color equals red, please select a search engine to use. This is just what we did. So Q was set, but get wasn't set. So we're just going to say, hey, in fact, there's nothing to do here. But, however, since we know how this thing functions, let's say Q equals E75 and engine equals foobar, right? And the page does not know what to do with it. Another form, when you're expecting, when you give them a set of options, be prepared to accept anything else. So it would have been good code to else if, else if, else if, and then else select a valid search engine. So when we look through the possible set of engines, we should have added an option. We should have expected the user might change that variable, because even though it seems like he wouldn't know about it, it's very easy, as we just saw, to find out about it. And let's go back here. I don't think I touched upon this very well. So when it does location, it basically takes the string and concatenates with get of q, which stores the actual string that we searched for, and just completes the string, completes the search. So there's an interesting, again, not very important, but a small gotcha. So let's say we do this. Let's actually.
How do you offset your Bing by a little bit?
The question is, how do you offset your Bing by a little bit? They're all just centered. So since the string is smaller, it just centers it accordingly. So it's not a clear defined. Yeah, it's all just yeah. It's all Bing is just smaller than the other. Yeah.
So I think what's confusing me at least is the PHP is in the same code, in the same file as the form. So for the PHP engine to run, it actually does need to go back to the server, right? Because the browser does not have a PHP engine.
Mm-hmm.
What is the advantage of actually putting the PHP code and the HTML code in the same file?
So the question is, what is the advantage of putting the HTML and the PHP code in the same file? It's just that it sort of makes things cleaner. You need a few more if conditions here and there, but you can sort of bottle all your everything relevant to that page into one single page. And in this case, for instance, it's great because the only processing that we do with the strings that they submit is just redirect them at the very top. So if you're doing something more complicated, it probably makes sense to use a separate page to sort of process their information. But here, since at the very beginning we're just saying grab their string, redirect them, we're done with their whatever the input they had, it's not a problem for us. So that's probably there's no real clear winner here. It depends on how you want the experience to be. So you could have a page that submits. So and there's also the actual experience of the user using the page. So you could let's say you have a cart going back to our example, and you add an item to it. One option is to remove them into a separate page and tell them, hey, this has been added to your cart. The other option is to stay on the same page. And once they submit it, just display a header which says, hey, you've added this to the cart. So there's sort of two sides to the coin, and it's completely up to you which way you want to go.
Okay.
Is there any other questions? OK, great. So what? Sweet. So all of this are examples that are on my set, like I mentioned. Now I think it would help to go over some of the examples that David went over in lecture. So this is on the CS75 site with lectures. We're going to look at a third global variable. The get we saw get we saw post. The third one's session. Session is sort of similar to them, as in it's global and it's the same idea. It's an array. It's a hash that stores different values. But unlike get and post, it is not cleared across each page. It is cleared across each session. We'll see what a session means in a second. But to begin with, let's say you are not locked in. So let's take a look at the source of this page. So at the very beginning, there's this thing called session start. So the first thing you need to know about sessions is every time you want to use the session variable, you want to start a session. You want to clear sort of either grab everything that you have in your session or simply create a new session if you don't have anything. So you use session start, and most of it is HTML. The only thing that's interesting here is if session of authenticated, presumably it's going to store a true or something other than a zero. It says you are logged in, and then it adds an additional ahref, logout.php logout, and then closes the thing. One thing I want you to take note of is this technique, which is very useful. While it's nice to have your PHP and HTML segmented sort of clearly, it sometimes makes very good sense to sort of use your HTML within the PHP. So if you look at this, the curly brace here for the if condition opens here, and the else opens here, and the entire condition closes here. So it's sort of HTML embedded within PHP, but it's going to display that only if it goes into that branch of code. Even though it's HTML, PHP sort of knows to skip that part when there's no if. So it says else you're not logged in. So let's take a look at login1.phps first. Okay, so simple login module, session start. There's a username and password. You probably don't want to store this in a flat file on your server because even though you won't be able to see PHP files, even though you'll never see the actual code, it's just more vulnerable if you just have your password sitting on a flat file. By flat file, I just mean any general file on your server. So you probably want to store it in a database or such, but it defines this thing called a user. So these are basically like defining constants. So if somebody who's familiar with C, hash define something. So user is jharvard and pass is crimson. We come back to isSet, the ones that we looked at. So it submits to the form in post in the form of post, and then it says if post of user is user. User is what we defined up here. We did that. So if we say that whatever is stored in the user variable of the post, user part of the post variable, if that is equal to user, and if the pass is equal to the password that we just set, set session of authenticated to true. So basically say, if this is the case, set this to true, and then redirect it just to the home page. So there's this function header. Sorry, yep.
Defines our
PHP. They're all PHP. So, So if you just look at where the tags open, they're the first. All the PHP starts here, and goes all the way up until here. And then obviously there's some PHP like in the middle. But
then why are we not saying define $user?
So the question is, why are we not saying define $user? Perfectly reasonable way to go about it. But in general, constants are again convention over configuration. Constants are simply defined using define with a capital all block uppercase letters. So that's just a convention that we follow.
Like C is that?
Like C.
Is it like an initial pass of the interpreter? Whatever?
I'm not sure. Again, I'm not sure if it probably is. I'm not sure if you can actually change these. Let's take a look at the define method in PHP.
It's just a symbolic.
So defines a named constant. Right, so I'm guessing you can. So it's just a symbolic like name. That's all there is
so
to
it's
it.
Not really any storage.
No, it's not. No. Sweet. So let's go back to the source. Okay. So so if the username is set, if the password is set, make sure you do all this, authenticate it, and once you authenticate it, set the user to the home page. So let's look at how this is done. So what is this? What is this variable here? It's a super global, exactly. So just like session, there's another variable called server. And as you might expect, HTTP host basically just gives you the name of the host you're in. So rtrim, you can look up the definitions online. I'm not going to go. It basically constructs the actual page that you're looking at. And it just redirects them to location slash home.php and then exits the file. So let's try logging in with jharvard and crimson. Jharvard, crimson. There we go. We're logged in. So if you take a look at the very beginning, cs75.net.lectures, login1.php. At the very beginning, we said, if this is set and this is set, we're going to, right here. Yeah. So in the actual page, we said, if we ever did see that, I was looking at the wrong file, home.phps. Yep. So here we said in home.phps, which is the page we redirected them to, we're saying, if session of authenticator is true, so if that condition evaluates true, display this message that says you are logged in and link them to the logout page. Any questions so far? Do you see how that log authentication worked? Sweet. Let's take a look at logout. Sorry, go on.
Oh, well, what you said before you got out of that one, I was question about the post up on top.
Question about the post up on top.
Yeah.
Where, on this page or the other page?
On the other page?
So this right here?
Right.
Yep.
Inside, you got the quote user lowercase. Where does that name come from?
So where does this quote user lowercase come from? As we've seen here, it's probably from a form. So let's go to login1.php and take a look at the source here. And in fact, the name is user, the pass And this is another HTML thing that I'm sure you're aware of, but it probably helps to keep in mind. But when you set the type equals password, you won't be able to see the text, so it'll just display it like any password, Gmail, or any of the other apps that you use. All right, so that's how the first one did. So let's take a look at this logout.phps. So let's go into login one. Let's go to home, actually. It says you're logged in. I'm going to hit logout. It redirected me to, we went to logout.php, and it says you're logged out. Let's go back to home, and it says you're not logged in. So let's figure out how the logout.php does this. So the first thing it does, we'll come back to the set cookie time. I don't know if we'll have time today, but if we do come to it, we'll come back and figure that part out. But the two most important lines at this point is the session start and the session destroy. So you're basically starting your session. You're saying, give me all that is in my session right now, and then clear all of it by just deleting it. So another common gotcha, try destroying a session without starting it, even if it's just that, it won't work. It'll ask you to start a session and then destroy it to clear all the variables that are stored.
So it's essentially most of what we've seen so far that session start does is it initializes that global.
Yep. What session start does is just initializes that global. Let's take a look at login2.php, and let's actually take a look at the source. I don't remember the username and the password of the top of my head. Okay, so it's J. Harvard and Crimson. Sweet. So before I go into this, back to home.phps. The reason, once we said session destroy, so when it restarted the session and it looked for session_authenticated, it did not find anything. It was not true. And therefore, it said none of this you are logged in happened, and it just displayed the else part, which is just you're not logged in, and then the form to log in. So that's how the when you went back to the page, it just said you were not logged in. But login2.phps, the first part is essentially the same. It just authenticates it. And so here the form action, something we've looked at is just set it to yourself and submit it. And the post and the value here is, so let's go into login. Let's say J. Harvard and... right, so it says you're logged in. So let's go into, oops, so I guess version 3 is not online. Okay, so let's just go back to login2.phps. So the only difference between the first and the second page, I wish I had 3 and 4 to show you, but I'll try to put them up by next week. I think David will go over them in the lecture, and we can go over it again. So the only thing it does here is it pre-populates the username field. So for instance, when you go on Gmail and you type your username and password, and you enter your password wrong, it doesn't clear your username. When you go back to the page, it in fact just displays it correctly. So let's see how it does that. Login2.php. Let's do and Crimson. Let's hit login. And oops, my password is wrong because my username was wrong, even though my password is right. So obviously it didn't authenticate. But the username is in fact still stored correctly. So in login1.php, when I did hit login, it said invalid login and it cleared both the text fields. So This goes back to sort of experiencing the actual page as a user. It probably helps to make these small changes so that they don't have to go in and enter their username again. How is this done? So the only part that's interesting to us here is it just says input name. So first there's the authentication part. So if it's authenticated, it just redirects you to the home page and it says you were logged in, everything's great. But if it's not true, obviously none of this will happen. It will go through the rest of the page. And in the rest of the page, everything is fine except for this part, which says set the value to the name of the user. So when we submitted version 2, so when we submitted, let me pull up tamper data, start tamper. So when I do Siddharth and... So if you take a look at the post that's being passed, it's the user and the password from the form field. So it just takes the it just sets the value. So let's hit OK and stop tamper, close this. If you take a look at the source now of the page, which is not loading for some reason, view page source. There we go. It automatically sets the value field to the username that I submitted since my login was wrong, and just fills it back in. Do you have any questions?
But that's another good reason to keep the form, painting the form and processing the form in the same file. If you have to repaint it, then
that is true. Like if you keep it in the same page, you can do this. Although you could potentially do something like store it in a separate session variable and sort of have it look it up in that case. But it depends on your individual design. And like you said, this does make it easier because all you have to do is look it up from the post variable. You don't have to set anything. Any other questions? Sweet. So one last administrative thing before we before the end of section today is we're trying. Last time I said CS75 Discuss was the Google group that you want to get in touch with, but try to direct all your mail to this Google group that I've put up here. So CS75-2010Fall @googlegroups.com. Much of the class is on it. Of course, help at CS75 is the staff mailing list. But if you have any questions that sort of like you think that other people might have or that aren't very specific to you, do get in touch with that email and we'll try to get back to you, or one of your peers will get back to you as soon as they can. Thank you for coming, and I will hopefully see you next week.